And the Mainland Podcast is back. Hi, everybody. Michael Citro here, managing editor of themainland.com. And we are here to talk about Orlando City Soccer Club once again. Joining me is Andrew Marcinko and Austin David. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Michael, what's going on? Thanks for having us.
Friday night sucked is basically how I'm going to intro this this segment. Orlando City was in some ways absolutely dominant for the majority of the 90 minutes against DC United, a very, very good team with a very good back line and a team that has risen to the top of the Eastern Conference, largely on the strength of a late Luis Silva goal on a free kick. And I just want to get your thoughts overall on the game. Andrew, I'll start with you, and then Austin, if you're still on the call, I will get you afterwards.
Just, I mean, a crushing depression. I don't know if there's any better word for it here. It's been rough being an Orlando City fan so far in MLS. They played great, obviously. Look on the bright side. That was the moral of the story from all the players and Coach Heath after the match, is to try to find some positives you can take out of it. Try and look on the bright side. And, you know, in this case, they have a fair point. They're really, the chances were good. There were lots of them. They were the better team. On another day, a couple of those balls find the back of the net. You know, with a new team, I guess if there's one thing I could excuse, it'd be some questionable, you know, finishing to start off the season here. So I'm willing to get over it. I'm willing to move past it. But I would really like to see them convert a few goals here in the next couple weeks.
Austin, you got any thoughts on Friday night's game?
Well, I have many thoughts, but I don't think I can fit that all into just this short amount of time. But, you know, all in all, Andrew kind of said it, it's a crushing defeat. The whole press box just had a collective bug as soon as the goal went in. People were like, oh, this is just like Vancouver, late free kick. Somehow they get a goal and win in extra time. And
it just it felt double as bad because it was just deja vu again. That made it so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the fact that people were, like, tweeting it before, and I saw people sitting next to me in the press box, like, oh, this is just like Vancouver. I'm like, why are you doing this to us? And then it happened. So, yeah, it's obviously frustrating, considering, like Andrew said, we dominated the game. I wrote an article the other day about Dennis Chin, and some people were saying, why did we get rid of Chinny? At least he could score. You know, so to say Orlando fans aren't used to this, it could be an understatement, because there's really never been this kind of scoring drought in the history of, you know, Orlando City Soccer Club.
And right, and two straight home losses has never happened for Orlando City in its existence, I believe.
I mean, losses were few and far between to begin with. They've only had 12 losses ever, so the fact that they've had two at home is just mind-boggling.
Not very many of those were home losses either in USL. But and it's interesting, I talked to Phil Rollins tonight, and he said that Friday night to him felt like an old Orlando City USL game where they were just dominating the possession and getting great chance after great chance, but the only difference was that the ball wasn't going in the net. And unfortunately, a late free kick in the 91st minute by Silva went right over the wall. Kyle Larin, for whatever reason, did not jump. He could have easily got ahead on the ball had he done so, and could have at least gotten a point, but to say that Orlando City didn't deserve all three is probably a little unfair, especially if you ask Ben Olsen, who said after the game he had no idea how his club won. Orlando City killed him. So, you know, I guess what we can take away from this is it is a young team. It's still just five games into their MLS existence. They haven't started finding the net yet, but they've also had some issues with some continuity issues up top. I mean, they finally get somebody playing well up top in Pedro Ribeiro, and 20 minutes into the game, he tears his hamstring.
Yeah, of course.
Kyle Larin came in, and a lot of people saying, oh, you know, he's not any good next. And I'm thinking, he's a 19-year-old kid playing his first, you know, decent length of minutes in MLS play. And the instant he stepped onto the pitch, the entire midfield opened up for Orlando City. I don't know if people noticed that, but those chances weren't coming the first 20 minutes, and when Larin got onto the field and started making his runs, he started opening up holes and spaces for Kevin Molino and Kaká and Eric Avila in the midfield. What did Larin bring to the team, Andrew?
Yeah, he's definitely, you know, a little different type of forward than some of the others we've seen so far. I mean, more or less, he's a prototypical forward. He's a guy who's played forward for all 4 years in college, sort of thing. So he brings a little more of that sense of when to make the run, of how to do hold-up play, which is sort of one of the most difficult skills that forwards have to learn. You saw Ribeiro sort of trying to do that. He's played some forward, but I'm not sure he's going to do that quite as naturally to begin with. And Rivas is a guy who hasn't played spent a lot of time, if any, as sort of a lone forward. So he didn't look as comfortable with the hold-up play. And just the timing of those runs, even. If you go back to the I believe it was the first goal versus Montreal, you saw a run from a veteran, Danny Mwanga. If you guys can remember this replay, he sort of veers off to the right when Kaká had the ball, and that opened up the defense to allow Kaká to make the pass to Ribeiro, who scored it, I believe. So that's the sort of run where even when you're not scoring, you're making a huge impact on the game. That's the stuff that Rivas and Ribeiro were having maybe a little bit of trouble with. So there is some thought that Lahren might be a little bit better at that just because he has more experience as a forward up top.
Austin, 17 shots at the net, 5 on target. 17 is a lot for MLS. 5 on target is kind of a little bit maybe above league average. What did you think when, you know, Hamid just started to, do you think he started to get into Orlando City's heads? Do you think guys are pressing too hard to get that home goal? What is about this team? Why can't they find the goal?
That's a tough question. There's a lot of reasons behind it. Obviously the whole forward debacle, you know, Patterson was going to start, then he got injured, so you had to throw Rivas up there, and then it's kind of been interchanging, and then Ribeiro stepped up, and now you have Kyle Lahren, who was supposed to be kind of a project. You know, they were supposed to let him kind of develop on his own, and now he's kind of trial by fire, essentially, up front. That kind of affects the way that the team plays, because they don't know who, you know, it's such a change from day to day and game to game. You have to try, especially as a young team, you have to try and get used to the players that are up top and how they play and, you know, what tendencies they like to do. But with the ever-changing, you know, forward, it's hard to do that. And so you play a ball that maybe Brian Rochez would be able to get, but then Danny Mwanga can't get to it. And then, you know, it's different. And, you know, for some of the newer players to MLS, some of the younger guys, you know, it's hard to get used to and be professional and not have that comfort level that they're usually used to playing with guys that they've been, you know, for some of the guys who have come up with youth, you know, teams, they've been playing with their entire lives and that kind of thing. So
that's a good point too, Austin, in that, you know, different players. Rivas is a left-footed player who is happy to shoot with his left. We've seen from far out. I think Ribeiro is primarily right-footed. Mwanga, I think, is right-footed. Even the littlest things like that are going to change where do you play the ball to the guy. Does he want it on his left foot for a shot? Does he want a through ball into the box, the right foot? You're dead on. That creates a whole set of difficulties having a different guy up there every match.
Yeah, and especially in the heat of the moment, you know, in the heat of the game, you're not stopping and thinking, oh, wait, is he left or right? Do I do this or that? You can't stop and think about that, you know, during the middle of a game. So that you know, that's another thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, we got a lot of positives we can take out of Friday night. Despite, you know, coming away with no points, again, we as we mentioned, Orlando City outplaying D.C. They outshot them by 17-11. And it seemed worse than that because DC got a bunch of them, like, all in one little five-minute spell.
How many shots happened on that the Breck Shea save? Was that three or four shots?
It was three, and they were all on goal.
Right.
It was three of their five shots on goal came within 5 seconds of each other. And two great saves by Ricketts and one by Breck Shea, which is up for MLS Save of the Week. Orlando City with more possession time. Greater passing accuracy, more passes, more duels won. I mean, just really statistically and on the field really outplayed them. We saw, I think, in a large way, we saw Kevin Molino's best game. He wasn't getting knocked off the ball easily. He was finding space, and he was getting chances to score. And he made one of the plays of the night with his scoop pass to Rafael Ramos.
That was a nice pass.
Just a really creative bit of play and put Ramos in alone. And Ramos, can't blame a guy for taking a shot there, but he certainly had another option there to go across to play the ball to his forward. But Molino was also guilty of that. He had a one-on-one with Hamid and could have connected with Lahren for an easier shot. But you could take Molino as a positive. You could take Breck Shea was very positive. His crossing and his passing was very, very accurate. He gave Molino basically a one-on-one situation with Hamid. Molino unfortunately took a heavy touch and then crushed it off the woodwork. But you know, those are the chances that are going to start going in for Orlando City sooner or later. And it's nice to see that, you know, we're seeing some guys link up that weren't doing it before. We still have some issues on that left side with some injuries. When Rivas came on, he certainly opened up the game quite a bit. And it's going to be interesting to see how that midfield, that attacking midfield, develops together as they get a little bit more comfortable with one another. Let's start with you, Austin. Who was your man of the match on Friday?
I'd have to say Breck Shea, honestly. I thought he was by far, it was, like you said, his best game. You know, he played well coming out of that U.S. training camp. You know, obviously he had the goal for the U.S., so that was, you know, a nice confidence booster to come back into you know, playing for Orlando City in defense against the defending Eastern Conference champions. So, you know, that was definitely a tough test for him since he is still, you know, very new to the position. And I think he performed great. And if he can keep this up, you know, get good services into the box, then they have a better chance of scoring.
Andrew, your man of the match on Friday?
I'm not going to argue with Breck Shea. I think he was probably the best player out there for Orlando. I thought, you know, you could say almost everyone played well. Almost everyone had their best match of the year that was on the pitch there. I thought Lahren was good. I thought Molino, I agree, had his best match. But again, those guys, you got to take some points away when you can't finish. If we're going back to our weekly player grades after the match, you end up losing a couple points when you can't finish your chances. Rivas had two, Molino had two, Lahren had at least two that really, you know, would have liked to see a couple of them finish. I would give some credit to Aurelien Collin as well. I thought he was really good, probably his best match of the season too. So he and Shea really held it down there in the back.
Yeah, and I had Shea as my man of the match as well with Aurelien Collin right there. Kaká also had a nice game. And Molino had a good game, even though he couldn't find the net. He had four shots, a really wonderful key pass to Rafael Ramos. And just the fact that he wasn't getting knocked off the ball, he was able to combine with Kaká and really force some excellent scoring chances in the final third. I thought he played really well.
It's worth talking about, you know, Molino's misses, though. Again, in our system, with only one striker, Molina is going to have to finish for us to win a lot. Teams are going to be guarding Kaká pretty closely, I'm guessing, from here on out. So whether it's Rivas on the left, whoever it is, and Molino on the right, he's got to finish some of those chances. Yeah, unlucky off the woodwork, and I think he really should have made that pass to Lahren on his breakaway for an easy goal. But we're going to have a hard time winning games until Molino starts finishing. There's not those extra strikers to cover for him.
Yeah, I think he's pressing a little bit, and once he gets that – once he, you know, he opens his account, I think he'll settle down and things will start to open up for him.
Yeah,
four shots on Friday. He and Lahren each had four, three for Rivas. Kaká only had one, which was surprising, but he was active all night, certainly in a facilitator role on Friday. But we got to turn the page from DC United. We're looking ahead to Portland, one of the better teams in the Western Conference over the last couple of years. Very, very difficult environment to play the Timbers up in their park, and it's not even an easy place to get to, really, direct flight-wise and all of that. So, Andrew, what do you think we're going to see on Sunday between these two clubs?
Yeah, I really think this is an interesting matchup because I think they're two teams that want to play a similar style of soccer. There's actually, you know, similarities beneath or deeper than on the field as well, in that they're both fairly recent expansion teams. Both had pretty incredible support, have had some huge matches in their home stadium so far. So a lot of similarities here despite the huge distance between the two clubs. I think Portland also want to try to hold on to possession more of a possession-based team, as does Orlando City. I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the match here, particularly coming off playing a DC United team who's really more direct, a lot of long balls sort of straight at the goal. Portland should be a lot more like Orlando City, so we'll see if they're really, they would be sort of the first team who might be able to contest us for that possession lead in the match. Obviously, everyone needs to be keeping an eye on Darlington Nagme, probably their best player and maybe one of the best players in Major League Soccer. He's sort of their danger man, if you will, in the match here.
Yeah, I think that the key matchup for me is going to be Amobi Okugo against Darlington Nagme in the midfield. Let's see if we can, you know, Nagby's hard to turn over, but let's see what happens with possession. It's going to be key. Because it's always easier for Orlando City, especially, to play with possession than to try to pressure the ball and win the ball back all over the pitch. Although they can play that style with guys like Darwin Serén doing a pretty good job so far this year. Austin, what do you see as the key matchup in the game on Sunday?
I have a feeling Kyle Aaron's going to be starting and. I just want to see a goal. There's really no key matchup for me. I think someone should just score, just to put it simply.
You know, sage-like advice from Austin.
Yeah, okay.
Keep it simple.
Score.
But, you know.
Yeah. I like your strategy for Sunday. Score goals. I will point out that Orlando City has taken, four of their 5 points have come on the road.
Right.
And they've gotten 4 of a possible 6. And they have scored 3 goals on the road, even though one of them was punched in by Tyler Derrick. It still counts. Sure. So they're scoring an average of 1.5 goals a game on the road and a third of a goal a game at home. So maybe we've got Portland right where we want them.
Yeah, and let's not give too much credit to Portland either. Obviously, they're a well-known team in the league because of the incredible fan support and Timber Joey and all this stuff. But, you know, they're not really Seattle or L.A. out there in the West. They're sitting in 7th place right now in the Western Conference. I think Orlando's in 6th in the East. Obviously, the West is a little tougher, but Portland's not some juggernaut of a team that we're necessarily expected to lose to. On top of that, we know they have some serious injury issues right now, including Diego Valeri, who's a very good player for them. So I don't want Orlando fans going to this match against Big Bag, you know, Portland and Timber Joey, thinking we're going to have a hard time with this one.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's kind of a fortress up there in Portland, so it'll be interesting to see how they play. I definitely don't want to see any wood cutting from Timber Joey.
No.
Because he'll cut off a bit every time Portland scores. So the less we see him on Sunday, the better.
Sure. save the trees, right? Save the rainforest.
That's right. That's right. Let's save that log for their next game.
There you go.
You know, they don't need to cut anything off of it this weekend. But we're going to bring in our guest now and talk a little bit more about Portland, get a little bit more in-depth knowledge about the Timbers. And, you know, as one of our new MLS foes, or, you know, one of our new teams that we're going to face for the first time. And, you know, this guy we're bringing in, he knows a little bit about them. So why don't we call in our first guest? Joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week is the managing editor for Stumptown Footy. That is the SB Nation blog covering Portland Timbers FC. Will Conwell, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, you live up there in the land of Timber Joey, and so, you know, we're jealous because you're going to get to see the game this weekend, and we're going to have to watch it on TV. But I want you to kind of tell us a little bit about the Portland Timbers. What is their sort of their history and their place in MLS, and what is your, you know, every team sort of has a role in the league that they're in. What is Portland's?
Well, I guess starting with the history, the Timbers were, of course, originally back around in the NASL days, North American Soccer, back in the 70s, 1975 to be exact, was when the Portland Timbers first played. Obviously that league folded, the Timbers folded along with it, came back in the USL days, or I guess it was the A-League to start off with, and then eventually made the jump up to MLS back in 2011. As far as the Timbers' spot in the league, since about, start of last year, been the perennial underachievers. Just not quite living up to the ridiculously talented players that the team seems to collect, but not quite get the most out of. Everyone's sort of looking, or at least around here, looking toward, or back toward the 2013 season when the Timbers made it to the semifinals of the MLS Cup before losing out to Real Salt Lake, and hoping to get that sort of production out of this team this year.
Now, Will, one of the big things that a lot of people know when people say, you know, the Portland Timbers is the fan base. You guys in Seattle have one of the most, you know, passionate fan bases in the league. Talk about, you know, how that's, since you've gotten into MLS, how that's been a big factor for you guys.
Well, I mean, it really goes beyond MLS. Even before the Timbers joined Major League Soccer, there was a, you know, big, passionate fan base in Portland. You know, if you look back, there's one TIFO that always stands out to me. It was Timber Jim, the predecessor to Timber Joey, cutting down the Space Needle with his chainsaw. It's one of my favorite TIFO of all time, and that's back from 2009. The Timbers have always had really strong fan support, but since coming to MLS, that's obviously grown even more. It frankly makes Providence Park a really intimidating place to play. I'm maybe intimidating is the wrong way to go. Teams get up for playing in Portland, and it's made for a lot of exciting games over the years.
Now, well, it seems like Portland's dealing with some of the same sort of injury troubles that Orlando has had of late here. Can you talk about who you're going to be missing for the match this weekend?
If you talk to anyone in Portland, I think they would take a little bit of umbrage at comparing our injury troubles to anyone else's. The Timbers are missing Diego Valeri, who was a bona fide MVP candidate last year. We would put him as one of the best players in the league, and I think anyone who's seen his body of work would be hard-pressed to argue. And then they're also missing team captain Will Johnson. Johnson dropped off a little bit last year from his production in 2013, but that was pretty much true of the whole Timbers side. But then again, the Timbers are also missing Johnson's backup, Ben Zemanski, and they've taken knocks to Diego Chara and Jack Jewsbury, although those guys are back in the lineup and playing well again now.
Well, you know, I'm fascinated by Timber Joey. I mean, it's best mascot in the league, I think, and I've thought that for quite a while, especially when you compare it to our, in much different way, terrifying Kingston mascot. How did Timber Joey become a thing, and, like, how is he allowed to just run around with a chainsaw in an MLS stadium?
Well, I mentioned Timber Jim before, we'll go back to him. Timber Jim was actually a guy who was essentially a cheerleader in the most literal sense of the word. He led cheers back in the NASL days, and he remained very involved in the Portland soccer scene through the years. When the Timbers came back into existence, he was still very involved. but eventually, you know, he decided to retire, put down the mantle, and let Joey take over for him. Now, Joey's chainsaw wielding might seem a little over the top. He does, in fact, have two chainsaws, one for cutting wood and one, you know, that won't cut anything. That's when he gets to run around and rev at people.
Oh, so he's got a show chainsaw and a work chainsaw then.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's okay. Actually got a number of work chainsaws. He is, in fact, an actual lumberjack. He's okay. Not just some guy who dresses as a lumberjack.
I got a two-part follow-up here. So first off, you're telling me there's one Joey. This is one guy every week, every season.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was one of the things where they had, like, a few of them. Point number two, have you met him before? What's he like in person?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He is, you know, he's just a regular guy. You run into him around the streets of Portland. I once ran into him at one of Portland's food carts at, like, 2 in the morning, and he's a perfectly reasonable guy.
All right.
Yeah.
So, Will, let me ask you, this is going to be one of the first times Orlando City has gone to somewhere where one of their former players has actually played in Donovan Ricketts. What kind of,
I think we lost you, Austin.
Uh-oh.
But I think I know where Austin was going with this, so maybe we can ask you in his behalf. Donovan Ricketts, you know, he's obviously been the starter with Tally Hall still rehabbing his knee injury for Orlando City. What kind of player is he remembered as being in Portland? Is he a guy that fans were kind of glad to get rid of, or were they sad to see him go, or was it kind of a mixture?
Oh, fans were definitely sad to see Donovan Ricketts go. I mean, this is a guy who won the Goalkeeper of the Year award in 2013. You know, he racked up Save of the Week wins over his two and a half years with Portland. And he's a guy who can still very much make the big saves that, you know, you need from a keeper. Now, his replacement, Adam Quarase, is also a very good keeper. So people aren't quite as heartbroken as they might have been. But Ricketts is definitely a guy who's remembered very fondly here and who I think people have a lot of appreciation for.
Okay.
I got you. Well, sticking back to the game this weekend here, I'm going to stick with this line of these two teams are similar squads, despite being on opposite sides of the country here. I think Portland's a team who wants to control possession a little bit as well, which is definitely Orlando's style more than a direct thing. But I know you guys have been experimenting with some different formations here, dealing with the injuries. Do you think we're going to see more of a possession style out of Portland in a 4-2-3-1, or do you think they stick with the 4-4-2 and play a little more direct against Orlando City?
I think that the Timbers are probably going to stick with their 4-4-2, but I don't think that necessarily means that they're going direct. The okay. Timbers get a lot out of Darlington Nagbe cutting into the center of the pitch from that right wing. And at times it almost looks like they have five players in the midfield with Maxi or Rudy dropping back from his spot up front.
For Orlando City fans that haven't seen Darlington Nagbe play much, definitely pop that name into YouTube right now because he's had some of the best goals in MLS, I think, over the last year or two.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe not over the last year. Nagbe had a famous in Portland goal-scoring drought until the final game of last year when he scored against FC Dallas. He has scored some big ones in his career, though, including the goal of the year in 2011. What you should keep an eye out for from Darlington Nagbe, though, currently, is frankly his ability to possess the ball with a defender on his back. There is almost no one in the league who's going to take the ball off of Darlington Nagbe when he's holding possession. It's really a sight to see.
Will, before we let you get out of here, I want to ask you, I want to get your thoughts on the match Sunday. I want you to say, if X happens, Portland wins, and if Y happens, Orlando City wins, what are those X and Ys, and what's your prediction for final score on Sunday?
Well, I think if Portland is able to hold possession, I think that they're going to have a much easier time on the defensive end of things. Despite the Timbers going direct in a few games early this year, I think this is still a team that's very much built around the idea of defending with the ball rather than allowing the other team to have it come at you. I also think that if Orlando can get in behind the defensive midfield pairing of the Timbers, which is likely going to be Diego Chara and George Foshive, they'll be able to make good use of that space in there and break down the Timbers' defense, which has been strong but has shown itself to still be coming together after the big change of bringing in Nat Borchers over the offseason. As far as the prediction for the score goes, I don't see either team keeping a clean sheet here. I'm going to go... I feel good about the Timbers right now. They're coming off their first win. They looked really good in training this week. I'm going to go with a 2-1 Timbers win.
All right, well, we'll see how it unfolds on Sunday. It's going to be pretty exciting. Orlando City's first trip to Providence Park to play the Timbers in MLS. Certainly coming off the DC United match where Orlando City, let's face it, just absolutely dominated and couldn't score a goal. It will be interesting to see what happens against one of the better teams in the Western Conference. Will, thanks so much for being with us. Good luck to you other than Sunday the rest of the year. And we'll see what happens. And thanks so much for being on the podcast with us this week.
Thanks for having me, guys, and good luck to you, except for Sunday as well.
All right, that's just going to about do it for this week's Mainland Podcast. And we want to thank Will Conwell for being on, and also want to remind you guys that we are on iTunes, and it would be really awesome if you could head over to iTunes and give us a rating and maybe even leave a couple comments about us. That'd be kind of good, too. That every little bit helps. But before we get out of here, I need some scores from you gentlemen. I need some predictions. I'm beside myself about Friday night, and I want to move on. Can I feel better about this Sunday? What's going to happen? We'll start with you, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're bound to have some improvement here. If we get even half as many good chances as we had versus DC United, we're bound to score one here this week. I think there's a good chance that happens. You know, that said, obviously it's very tough to come away with 3 points in Portland. Their fans are just really passionate, some of the best in the league. You know, all the credit to them. I think a lot of Orlando folks and people around the Orlando team aspire to for things to go as well as they have for the Portland Timbers. All that said, I think with all the Timbers' injury concerns and us being really motivated after a tough loss there to DC, I think we'll definitely get a point out of this one. My gut tells me it'll probably be a 1-1 draw.
Austin.
Yeah, I think my gut's telling me the same thing as you, Andrew. 1-1 draw. I don't know. I've for the last few weeks, I've gone with really obscure ways of Orlando scoring. I said Danny Mwanga was going to score in Montreal, and can't remember what I said last week, but for this week I think I'm going to go with Carlos Rivas taking a free kick. I was at the reserve match the other day, and he had a 35-yard free kick that clanged off the crossbar, and you know, he's got a powerful left foot, so I'm going to go with him scoring, but I think Portland's going to level it up, and we'll take a point from them.
All right, well, I don't think anybody questions Rivas' foot strength. Let's just get some accuracy on that thing. I'm with you guys. I see a 1-1 draw here. I'd love to see two or three or four goals from Orlando City. I think it's a tough environment. I'm not sure who's going to score the goal. I think it's just one of these things. I just have a feeling somebody off the wall is going to score that next Orlando City goal. I'm going to say a defender. Maybe it comes off of Seb Hines' head,
okay,
off a corner kick or something. But I see it as possibly a 1-1 draw. I certainly hope to get a point out of this road trip. You talked about the reserve game. For those who didn't hear, the reserves played Minnesota United and lost 3-2 on Tuesday. But here's the thing. Orlando City took a 2-1 lead into halftime on goals by Brian Roches and Connor Donovan. And it was former Orlando City player Jamie Watson who tied the game late and then drew a penalty to set up the game winner when Orlando City had replaced quite a few players off the reserves with academy players. So it was there you had some NASL starters going up against some academy players and kind of holding their own. So even though it was a 3-2 loss, it was a pretty good result for considering who was playing. Guys, next week we'll come back. We'll talk about hopefully the win over Portland Timbers, and we'll preview, of course, the first trip to Crew Stadium. Well, I guess it's not called that anymore, but I'm going to still call it that because I'm not getting paid by any Spanish insurance companies to call it something else.
I thought everybody was. You're not? You haven't gotten in on that yet?
I didn't get my check. I've been checking in the mail every day.
That's where the money is, Spanish insurance companies.
So anyway, two straight road games. Then we'll be back on the 26th, back at home. Phil Rollins said that the season tickets total is up to about 14,000. It's about third in the league. So good job for Orlando City's fans. And we will, of course, be covering all of that all season long here on the Mainland Podcast. If you do want to help us out and support us, maybe get some advertising for your business, please write to us, themainland@gmail.com. Maine is M-A-N-E, like a lion's mane, themainland@gmail.com. We could certainly help you out. Don't forget to visit our shop. Just there on the homepage, you can visit the Mainland shop, and you can purchase one of our mighty T-shirts, like our Roarlando T-shirt, which is really, really awesome. I know Austin David has purchased one himself.
Indeed, I have.
Until next week, thanks to Austin David. Thanks to Andrew Marcinko. Thanks for being here, guys. We'll see you. I'm Michael Citro saying go City.